Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Wednesday at 5 o'clock, and if it's Wednesday at 5 o'clock and you are fortunate enough to be tuned in to the Heritage Radio Network, then you are unfortunate enough to be listening to me, Phil Colicchio. Teasing there. Phil Colicchio bringing you the business of the business. That is the show here on the Heritage Radio Network that explores the business side of the hospitality industry, restaurants, hotels, cruise ships, food trucks, airplanes, all of the things that bring hospitality to life. We explore how they keep themselves economically sustainable and also explore their trials and tribulations. If you miss this show live, you are always welcome to visit our website at www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the business icon and you can find our show and the 40 or 50 earlier shows that we've been doing for the past few years on Wednesdays. We are also you can find us as a podcast on iTunes. And I would be remiss if I did not remind our listeners that Heritage Radio is celebrating a birthday, 5 years old this summer. And part of that celebration is asking all of you listeners who enjoy the programming here to become members and to help us sustain this this terrific project that comes to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, and is brought to you by very interesting and passionate people who are in the hospitality industry, principally in the restaurant and provisions side of things. I get as big a charge out of listening to the sponsors tell me about their products as the sponsors do recording those segments because everybody involved in this radio station is passionate about their subject matter. And that is a really easy way to lead in to my guest this week, one of the more passionate guys I know about the restaurant industry, and that is Michael Klein of the Philadelphia Inquirer. He is known as the insider for the Philly.com food section, and that is a daily, sometimes once, sometimes twice, sometimes three times a day. He'll bring people in the Philadelphia region. How many people are in the Philadelphia region that you reach?
Gosh, I don't know. Let's see.
Millions upon millions.
Well, millions upon millions, but our daily, it's funny, our, not to belabor this, but there's the Philadelphia Inquirer, right, and the Philadelphia Daily News, which are our sister publications. I work for Philly.com. My work appears in the Inquirer also, and Philly.com actually has a larger audience than the Inquirer and the Daily News ever had,
you know,
which is scary.
We're going to, it's not scary. I think that's great.
Oh, it's great, but it's scary great.
Well, it's scary because you and I are men of a certain vintage.
Yes.
And that means we both grew up with ink stains on our hands from reading newspapers. And if you're like me, you know, box scores, I couldn't get enough of them. And, yeah, you know, and all things newspaper. And it was a ritual. It was like going to mass if you're Catholic. It really was. Yeah. It was a daily ritual with the newspaper that I still actually quite enjoy. But I also enjoy the daily ritual of finding out what's going on around the world online. And that's kind of what I really want to talk to you about. And that's what fascinates me about your job, is that your career has spanned the print media. And I'm not ready to put the death knell on the print media.
Neither am I.
But you were a pioneer in bringing restaurant news to the internet. And, well, you were. And I want to know, tell me about the differences that you found over time between what you're able to do in the print piece, what you're able to do now with electronic media, and how they play off each other.
Well, the simplest answer is, I could type all day and all night and keep hitting the send button, and it doesn't matter. There's no limit on what you can write online. It's print. I have 120 lines, and if it's 121 lines, that 121st line gets cut off.
Just goes.
So it goes. I mean, it's a simple physical issue.
Yeah.
But online, digital, let's call it digital, is so much richer because you can hyperlink. You can be interactive with your reader.
I can
get instant feedback from people.
And you do, don't you?
Oh, all the time.
And because you're not a critic, you don't get the, you're an a-hole, Michael.
Well, they do that anyway, but it's... I'm proud to say that I'm not a critic.
Right.
It's really just steering people to what's new. In a previous conversation, you said to me you're handling like the births and the deaths. And
yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah,
I mean sometimes I get the people on the restaurant's life. I try to steer away from the specials, which I feel are advertising and should be treated as advertising.
Right.
Because restaurants should have an advertising budget and spend it. And
yeah.
I don't think it's my job to say that they're having, Blue Claws at Wednesday nights for $8.99.
That's not what your writing is about. I mean, I read your writing. Your writing is really about what's happening with in a particular neighborhood or in a with a group of restaurants or with a chef that's up and coming or who's really on top of things right now. And I know you've got a very, you have a lot of people who talk to you because you really do break news.
It's, and a lot of that is longevity, but I mean, I feel some competition from maybe not Yelp and the other review sites because I don't do reviews, but in a way they are competition because it's still people clicking away. Instead of clicking on my stuff, they'll click on Yelp. So,
well, let's though, but I don't want you to diminish what you do for this next question.
Okay.
All right. But how economically important to the restaurant industry in Philadelphia is what you do?
I think it's enormous because they need, it's sort of like, okay, it's like sports. You can cover restaurants the way sports are covered.
Right.
And that's what I try to do.
That's a great models. Analogy.
Because sports is huge. And there's some, I think there are some verticals, if you want to call sports a vertical and real estate a vertical. Food is a huge, there's a huge amount of interest, not only in the restaurants, but in food in general. I mean, I run Philly.com food, and we run every recipe that's carried in the Inquirer and the Daily News. Admittedly, it's not a huge number, but it's still a rich database. I have every recipe run in the newspapers back to 1979 that you can access online.
Right. And that's interesting for that person who wants to, who collect, a lot of people collect recipes and a lot of people want to focus back. But I think more people read what you write the way a sports fan reads the sports page.
Sure.
Is, what did Jose Garces do last night? What was that event that Vetri threw? Who was there?
Right.
Right. Who was his great. And by the way, I'll put a pitch out. Every year in June, Mark Vetri, really one of the great chefs in the United States, who is based in Philadelphia, does a charity dinner for the Vetri Foundation and for Alex's Lemonade Stand. pediatric cancer research group. And Chef Vetri is so well-respected by his peers that they come from around the country for an annual event. For them, it's 2 days. For the rest of the world, it's one. But it's an extraordinary event that is held at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. And those of you who are foodies, I will tell you, buy a ticket and go next year, because you will be able to meet and talk to every one of your food heroes.
That's amazing.
Close up. They're all there for a great purpose. I have never seen a food festival where the chefs want to interact more with the people who attend. So I that's a bit of a plug, but that's also a news piece,
it
right?
Is.
You attended that this year. We bumped into each other.
Yes,
I attended.
Was pleasantly surprised to see.
Well, I have to, you know, I have to make my presence.
Announce
my presence with authority. I think is how the how it went in the movie. But but more importantly, what did you see there from that was newsworthy?
Everything. I mean, I saw. You know, it's interesting. I saw a lot of the guys from Big A Ice Cream.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool that they were, you know, I heard that they were coming to town, and I finally beat them down and got them to talk about what the project was.
Right.
It's very interesting. You know, are they going to succeed in Philadelphia? I think they have a great location.
I think they're going to kill it.
And I think they also, knowing their landlord, they probably have a great real estate deal. And, you know, it's funny. From the people I talk to, the real estate deal is more important than just about anything.
Well, we talked last week about the cannibalism that exists in neighborhoods that succeed.
Yes.
I live in Princeton, New Jersey. We have this wonderful downtown square called Palmer Square that was 20 years ago populated with local merchants. And now there's just maybe one or two, because the real estate has gotten so expensive. So we do have this real estate culture that cannibalizes itself. But, you know, I'm also here to say that, hey, the hospitality industry has succeeded so greatly over the last 20 years that perhaps they ought to start thinking about acquiring real estate and making sure that the special qualities that a restaurateur who's blazing a new trail has a place to do it. Well, other side of that coin, right? We got neighborhoods that need development, right?
That's true.
And it took 30 years. It took 30 years for Union Square to develop into what it is now, right?
And now it's going to be gone. So it's...
Well, so there'll be another one.
There will. It's funny, though. It looks like just about every developer now is using a restaurant or the prospect of a high big name restaurant to lure in other retail and especially residential.
It is a huge, I'm so glad you brought that up. And here's where the business guys sort of, we sit back and talk about this all day. You just talked about Big Gay.
Right.
They've been on the show. Terrific. Kevin Spraga, mm-hmm. is a chef in Philadelphia. He's doing really special things. Kevin's been on the show as well.
Yep.
Did one of the more frank interviews that we've ever had on this show. Talked about being on, you know, being flat broke. Talked about having to take a chance after he won a few bucks on the Top Chef show. Talked about what it's like being a black chef in the United States and in Philadelphia. Was really great about it. But he's in that same development that the Big Gay Ice Cream fellas are in. And that's not an accident.
No.
That's a mixed-use development. Mixed-use development now requires, I think, right, requires restaurateurs and specialty retail in order to sell their units. Tell me about what you see. I mean, that's a really, in my view, the location, I'll tell the audience, is right around Broad Street and South.
Yeah, it's right on the corner. I mean, it's mm-hmm. you can't. It's farther south than Philadelphia is a really quirky city because you can go one block and be out of the, you know,
not much different than New York.
Really? Okay.
You can go a block and find yourself in another world.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I always think of Philadelphia as more specifically like that. Like, he's Kevin's opening about two blocks south of where his flagship restaurant, Spraga, is.
Right.
And it's South Street is it's not quite as busy as Broad and Pine, but there's enough. You know, South Street is it's how quirky things are.
But you're writing about it.
Right, but yeah. South Street is an eastbound street that gets a lot of vehicular traffic. It's sort of a gateway from Center City to South Philadelphia. It's also the edge of this huge other part of South Street, South Street West, they call it, the streets west of Broad Street that are exploding right now. So it's actually in a great location. It's smack on the corner, so you can't miss it.
So who else is doing special things in Philadelphia, and will those things translate regionally and nationally?
Well, not everybody wants to be regional and national. I mean, you got Stephen Starr, who started in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he's a, and I mean this in the best sense of the word. He's a monster now.
Yes,
right. He's everywhere.
Yeah, he is. I used to count his restaurants, but I think he's up to 19 in Philadelphia alone. And
that's like counting funeral homes on Broad Street on your way down to the stadium. It's been a game that I've been playing for many years.
Yeah,
but Starr. I mean, Starr really can be considered the godfather of the, you know, of the Philadelphia nouveau restaurant scene, right?
Sure, because a lot of the independents, and there are some independents, a lot of them worked for him.
Yeah.
They learned the systems that make a restaurant work.
So how did you cover Starr in your... Start covering Starr in the newspaper?
Oh, definitely. That was 1995, so I'd been doing the column for about 2 years, and I heard about this cocktail bar that was coming to Old City, which is right in the historic district of Philadelphia. It was a former diner called the Continental Diner, and it was, you know, a greasy spoon diner, and he had made a lot of money as a concert promoter and decided that he saw a cocktail bar somewhere, decided to replicate it. And I remember everybody freaked out over the lights over each table. It looked like an olive speared with a toothpick, oversized toothpick. And that, in 1995, was the hit of...
Design.
That was...
Right.
You know, and they, by the way, they still have the same lights. They would never change them.
I'm not laughing at... I'm laughing because I was a young professional in Philadelphia at that time.
That's right.
And I recall the commotion that the Continental caused. And thank goodness it did. And it sort of kept you... I'm sure that was the beginning of you getting really busy.
Yeah.
With this. So we're talking a little bit about the economic impact that what you do has on the restaurant scene in Philadelphia. What other cities in the country do you see that are breaking through in terms of supporting these one-offs like Philadelphia does? I mean, you're able to report each day on a new opening,
right,
or a planned opening. And it's not just the Jose Garces's and the Vetri's and
right.
and the Spragas. It's great, you know, great new things coming up in great different neighborhoods, right?
Oh, if Washington right now is exploding.
Yep.
I mean, Washington was always, and I could never understand why it was such a dead restaurant town when you think of all the transient business and the business there. I was always amazed. I mean, Boston's still pretty solid. Of course, New York, Chicago, L.A., I don't know. I don't know too much about the restaurant coverage there. But Washington and Austin, Texas, of all places.
Ew.
Really.
Keep it weird.
Yeah.
That's right. Keep Austin weird.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I've been chatting with you so long. We need to take a little break.
Okay.
We'll have a glass of water. We'll let our sponsors get a word in edgewise. Michael Klein from the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia.com is my guest. Man, this guy does some interesting stuff. We'll be back in a minute.
Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. Do you love us? Do you really? Do you count on us for real food news and content? Well, we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a not-for-profit organization, which means we depend on underwriting, grants, and the support of members like you to keep broadcasting. Help keep our voice alive. Visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org and click the donate button today. We promise to never stop in our mission to create a world that's more sustainable, equitable, and delicious by expanding the way eaters think about food. Thanks for listening, and thanks for showing your support.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio is like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, my name is Joe Carroll from Spite and Dival, and you're listening to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, we're back here on The Business of the Business. Phil Colicchio bringing it to you with my guest, Michael Klein from Philly.com. I misspoke earlier, Philly.com. And all of you should check out Philly.com.
Click the food button.
Click that food button. It's easy to do. Read Michael's several updates per day. Also want to give a thanks to the Punch Brothers who provide our musical interludes for The Business of the Business. Punch Brothers are out in California right now recording a new album. Very sad to have missed the opportunity to go out there and watch them record with T-Bone Burnett. Oh. They were nice enough to invite me. I had to miss it, but I'm sure that album will beget a tour. And just like I say, whenever I get a chance, go see the Punch Brothers. They will change your life if you like music. They are the most extraordinary musicians I've come across in a long, long time. Passionate guys, just like my friend Jack out there. In the booth, and just like Michael Klein from Philly.com, the food editor there. And Michael, we've got some time left. I am really interested in the moment in time. You've got such a unique seat sort of on the history of the change from print media to electronic media in the restaurant world. When was it that you saw this is a difference maker, this is going to change things?
It had to be around 2006. When my mother, who is now 78 years old, got email, that was pretty a watershed moment. But that actually, I'm being flip about it. It's when high-speed internet really started getting into homes and people became more, on at least from the desktop perspective, became more of more internet users. It was I think that's when the critical mass really kicked in, and people realized. And this was, I mean, not to go, but we can go back into the mid '90s when newspapers began putting all their content online for free, saying, "Oh, the advertising revenue is going to keep up with it," and that was almost too quickly disproven. Mm-hmm. But the horse was out of the barn, and we, you know, as an industry, the media business has just killed itself. You know, we're giving away, you know, my site's free, the Times, I buy a Times subscription online, a digital Times subscription, but it's really tough to get people to want to pay for news.
Well,
so that's,
you know, they've been conditioned that it's free.
And right, but think about this. You know, when I went to Philly.com, I transferred actually from the Inquirer to Philly.com 3 years ago because I wanted to do this full time. I'd been doing other features writing in addition to the restaurant stuff. And when I went there, fortunately, I could keep my salary, which, you know, even journalist salaries are being eroded year after year because of budget cuts and things like that. But I still kept my pay and my years of service. And unfortunately, the people now coming up in the journalism world are not being paid commensurately with their experience. So it's tough, and it's.
So is there one of the things that, well, it's a good time to ask it, because I was going to ask it towards the end of the show, but you've led me to it. What you do, I can guarantee you, is incredibly interesting to the vast majority of the people who listen to this show. They're all asking themselves, you know, at least people who are sort of at the beginning of their careers are asking themselves, how do I become this guy? What do I have to do to get that kind of experience and the right kind of contacts that people will talk to me about this? How does somebody become? I once heard somebody ask Howard Cosell back in the day.
Oh God!
Right, but Howard Cosell in his day was a very, very important journalist.
Yes.
But he was asked, "How do I become you?" And he was asked that by a student, a graduate student. And I ask you the same question. I'm a graduate student somewhere. How do I become you?
You stick around long enough. I mean, I've been doing this for 21 years. I've been in. I've just marked my 28th anniversary at the company formerly known as The Enquirer, whatever we're called.
I hope that appeared on LinkedIn somewhere.
I'm a big LinkedIn guy. It's longevity. I mean, I know a lot of these guys I remember the day that Jose Garces started at Alma de Cuba with Douglas Rodriguez. He comes in there. I don't even think he had an apartment at that point. And, you know, then he became executive chef of Elvez, the Philadelphia Elvez.
Right.
And then he left and, started building an empire. And so, it's from talking to people, it's just like...
But you stuck with it. I mean, your point, right? Your point, as I'm hearing it, is, you know, the old, very old-fashioned. It's stick-to-itiveness. Be a straight shooter, right?
Well, be a straight shooter. I mean, I don't, you can't buy my coverage. You can barely buy me dinner. My wife and I have 2.5-year-old twins. So I go out so seldomly that I really can't be bought with a meal. It's really, I'm being funny about it, but it's just good old journalism where you just start talking to people and they turn you on to something new or some new information. Some of my best sources are real estate people.
Right.
It goes hand in hand. I also have the suppliers. I mean, think about the restaurant industry is one thing, but there's a whole ancillary, and I'm talking about more than just the food people.
That's what this show is about.
Right, but think about the dishwashing companies and the linen companies and the guys who clean the grease traps.
Exactly.
These are all sources, and I'll tell you, I can usually tell if a restaurant's about to fail because I get calls, so-and-so is behind on their bills.
Not paying me.
Or they're COD now.
Right.
And I hear that. Do I use it in print? Of course not, because that's not really what I do. And it's also, somebody could be behind and then 2 weeks later they get an infusion of cash or something happens and they pay all their bills and why hang these guys out to dry?
Well, that's not journalism. You don't break stories that says I hear so-and-so is going to close.
Exactly. Of course not. That's irresponsible.
Right.
I also don't traffic in rumors, at least in print or online, because, you know how many deals there are that...
You're an actual electronic journalist, and a lot of those don't exist.
I think a lot of it is because of my training as a traditional print journalist, and also because I can afford... if you try to do what I do for a smaller website, I don't think the economics would work.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yes.
Philly.com. Eater.
Yeah.
What are the differences?
The difference is that Eater has in their outside of New York. I don't know how they work in New York.
No, I want to know. I'm specifically focusing on Philly because I know
okay.
how they.
Okay, Philly, they have a part-time or an editor who works or is paid as a part-timer, probably paid per post. And economically, let's say, for argument's sake, they pay the editor $75 a post, which is probably around $50 to $75. Let's say $75. And she does, five posts a week. How much money is that?
Not a lot.
Not a lot of money. Not, it's certainly not enough to live on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I do more than five posts a week, but I also run the food site, and I'm paid a living wage.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about, I freelance for Zagat. I do that for fun, really. The economics, though, in media now, it does not support paying someone, a family person, a living wage.
So you're going to lose quality in terms of journalism, and you're going to get shortcutted. And so guys like you are becoming rarer and rarer.
Right. But you know what, Phil? It's also happening in every other facet of journalism, or at least what we used to call print journalism. You know, the food can be sold against. They can sell ads against food content on on our site.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
But news, there are a lot of advertisers who like news, but news is a harder thing to sell about. So let's say you are an independent investigative journalist.
Okay.
That's a really tough buck. It's not – entertainment's much easier to sell against, sports. That's why there are all these sports blogs and food blogs. But there aren't many news blogs that are not – that are independent.
Right.
There are a lot of opinion blogs, but – They tend to be personal,
and that's exactly, I guess again, men of certain vintage,
yes,
right. We're not. I wasn't conditioned to be reading news in the form of someone else's opinion, and right. So I'm very dismissive of any news show that is so biased. That you can't, that it becomes obvious that it's not about the news, it's about the slant.
Of course.
So, and in the restaurant industry, taking it back to hospitality, I personally think that, the eater has a slant, right?
You do? Where's their slant?
Well, I mean, that they're a little more TMZ-like. They like to be a little more, they like to be a little more...
In Philadelphia, I don't notice that at all.
Okay.
Philadelphia is like... And again, it's no disrespect to the editor in Philadelphia, but she's only been doing it for less than a year. She doesn't, I don't think I'm any more talented than, and I'm not being false. This is not false modesty. I've been around long enough so that I know these people. I can be a little bit bitchy if the worst thing to do is to lie to me and say that you're not doing something, and then I read about it somewhere else. That really gets me upset because you lied to me. If somebody else legitimately gets a scoop before I do, it doesn't happen often enough, and probably because I get.
Well, I mean, lying to a journalist is kind of an immature thing.
It is. I understand it. Like, my own daughter is a caterer, a vegan caterer, and she has a storefront, and I know something about her. And if I read, I'm in this really quirky area here because I hate writing about my daughter, even though. She
happens to be part of the scene.
She happens to be, but I try not to, because of course I disclose that she's my daughter, so that makes it fair. But I know something about her business, and I'm sure I'm going to get scooped on this news, which is pretty, But
hey, that's the nature of your business, right? Is that if there is someone else out there who's got the same level of commitment that you do, and that's pretty rare. And is able to support themselves in a reasonable manner, then I think you're going to have a lot of people that will pursue a career like yours. I asked you to be on the show, and I asked you to be on the show because I think your career is interesting.
Thank you.
I think your area of focus is incredibly interesting, and I think that you have been blessed with a city. That had an incredible, I can't even say resurgence, an incredible birth, of restaurants and hospitality. I'm going to put in a pitch. I still think that you ought to be covering hotels and what hotels offer to people in Philadelphia, because hotels are becoming the new meeting places. Lobbies are no longer lobbies. Lobbies are living rooms. They're
That's
community living
true.
Rooms. And I think that that's an area that that you should be exploring, but I'm selfish. Okay. So Michael Klein, Philly.com, The Insider. All of you should visit the website. Michael, tell the website.
Oh, Philly.com and just hit the /food, or just go to Philly.com and hit the food button.
Let's identify where people can follow you.
You can follow. Actually, the easiest way to do it is to go Philly.com/Mike, and it gets right to my blog. That's my little shortcut.
And there's a lovely photograph of you in a tie. I think I'll never see that again in real life.
No, my little kids look at it and go, Daddy, and they think that's cute.
Michael Klein, thank you for coming all the way to Bushwick from Philadelphia and experiencing Roberta's and talking honestly with me about your business and how it impacts the restaurant industry. Folks, looking forward to coming back and bringing you some more exciting guests, not just from Philadelphia, but like I say, I think Philadelphia is just a great town to be looking at right now because it's showing the whole of the United States what can be done in an urban environment when people like Michael take the time to explore it, to write about it honestly, gave a great boost to the economy. Thanks for coming up.
My pleasure.
Jack, thanks for the help out there, and we'll see you all next week. Let's let the Punch Brothers take you home with Movement and Location. Thanks for listening to The Business of the Business. Phil Colicchio, signing off.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.